You have to look at what's going on, because it's a central thing for most, if you really look at it, that we feel basically that things aren't going right. We're not getting what we want in life. And we're feeling bound and oppressed by our problems, by who we are, by our what's going on. And it's really, and if you look at despair, it's when it's bad, it's this feeling of a concentrated feeling and thoughts which seem to be out of our control. I mean, none of us kind of like think, wake up in the morning and say, okay, what I want to do today is despair. You know, I want to just feel like, and part of it, you know, and in a way, when we're despairing, there's that kind of restless, uncertain feeling, because you don't really know what you know, where to go. It's almost like something isn't, you know, there's no way to turn it in a good direction. You know, and the doubt kind of predominates. I mean, doubt is always in despair. You know, we have trouble figuring what we need to do. And you can even have that kind of feeling of despair just come up when we're in a painful situation, something goes wrong. You know, you make certain kind of mistake that you've been making before. And you feel like, oh God, my life isn't what I want it to be. And there's that despair that we're not who we want to be. You know, our life isn't what we want it to be. You know, what have we done with our lives? You know, it's not going in the right direction. And it's important to see that all, first of all, that all despair and really is a spiritual problem. And it's a spiritual problem that comes out of hoping for the wrong things. That actually, if you look at your hopes, you can actually see where your despair is coming from. By hoping for things, for instance, for hoping that your body's not going to fall apart, eventually, sooner or later, even if you live to 100, despair is going to come in, because sooner or later, it's going to fall apart. And although that sounds absurd, it actually isn't. I've been around people who are very, very old and still feel utter despair when suddenly the obvious aspect of life comes. And it's important to see, it's like I always like a line I remember reading one Buddhist master did, as he said, for a while he put up in his zendo a sign saying, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here." And he didn't really mean it in this. He was really saying all those kind of, there's actually a deep spiritual hope that we do have to cultivate, but it's not the normal hope that we think of getting what we want in a way we can define. You know, the usual solution to despair, the only solution really to despair, is to find something that you can put your energy in your life and give it meaning, because despair is really seeing your life without meaning. When something's full of meaning, you don't despair. It's when you feel like there's no point, that it's not going anywhere. And you can actually often look at a lot of things and wonder, what's the point? And I think we've all had that feeling like, what's the point? You know, I've even had it where I don't want to get out of bed. What's the point of getting out of bed, of doing anything? And on one level, it doesn't have a deep, you know, what difference does it make? You know, you clean, it gets dirty, you do it and it gets, you know, it just goes away. And if we're not careful, the solution to despair will be more despair when we just fill our lives with meaningless goals. You know, things that actually don't work either. But we can occupy themselves with ourselves we can at least for a while do those wholeheartedly and then wonder later down the road why it's not working. And I think if you look at your life, you've probably done that at some point where you kind of wholeheartedly was doing something and for a while your life seemed to be working and then it started to evaporate because what's the point? It's, kind of the way people can be very goal-oriented and get their goal and then it's like, what's the point? And then feel this despair. Okay, now I'm this, so what? You know, now I have what I thought I wanted to have. And as long as I was pursuing it, it was pretty meaningful. What's the point now? And it's hard to come up with another goal, to do it. Just like we can have, you can substitute worldly goals for spiritual goals and then find your spiritual life filled with despair. You know, it's kind of, I guess I'm going to be doing well if I do this, that, the other thing in my spiritual life. And you can have this kind of list, mental list of what you're trying to do, of what good practice constitutes, and all the rest. And then feel despair when that doesn't come up. You know, when you don't actually do it. Because in a way, you know, there's something much deeper going on that we're pursuing. There's a deeper goal than that will give our whole lives meaning, but we have to then set it not superficially, even spiritually superficially. 'Cause acceptance, you know, some people think of acceptance as kind of just accepting that everything's wretched, miserable, and it's okay to feel trapped and crummy. Actually, that's not acceptance. That's just a feeling going through us that we have to accept. But we have to realize that that isn't what's real, and there's something much deeper. Because if you just feel that way, you'll try to then blot out reality on some level or other, because there doesn't seem to be much point in just experiencing feeling utterly miserable. You know, in fact, I sometimes think of, you know, this writer used the image, he says, a lot of people kind of in like, you look at urban life, growing up in New York, I can think of urban life, where a lot of people go around trying not to notice anything. You know, they walk through the streets, I don't want to see what anybody else is doing. I don't want to meet the eyes of anybody else. I don't want to pay attention to anything because I may have to do something. I may have, you know, it's too painful to kind of just be there. You know, so you want to just shut everything out. But actually, that's painful when you live in a city, and it's painful when you try to do it, you know, in wherever you are. And, you know, just like I kind of talking about kind of getting wrong goals, a number of times in my life, you know, in the monastery, you have monastic ranks. And occasionally somebody, and even in a monastery, what often comes up is that people get caught, you know, will feel a despair because they'll judge themselves if they, you know, wow, I guess I'm not doing well if I don't, you know, if other people are doing better than me, apparently, because they're going forward. And that's kind of a normal feeling, and you have to really look at what's the deeper meaning of what you're doing. Are you just doing, are you willing to kind of accept where you are, and do you really feel there's a problem with who you are and where you are? And often training really is trying to accept where we are and cultivating the taking the refuge in the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, that's telling you it's enough to be who you are, where you are, and that if you just keep going forward, everything will take care of itself. What your real heart really wants, you will get. But that's only if you're actually kind of turning yourself in the right direction. if you keep turning yourself in the wrong direction by putting your hope into things that actually won't work, it's kind of like trying to live without dying. It won't work. You know, and it's actually important. Anyway, any questions as I'm talking on? Yeah.
It seems sometimes that perhaps I don't think it's just an appearance, but not because it appears to be, when in fact there is meaning, I'll say, in one's life. And suddenly, or not so suddenly, you wake up in dark wood. There's plenty of meaning to go around, and it doesn't make any sense at all. In a very dark and complicated place. It's a much more complicated one to deal with and to sit with. And it was a deeper spiritual issue or question there. It can really quite literally grab you by the scruff of your neck and bat it on the ground. What about that?
Well, that's actually pointing to that in a way. If you look at it carefully, you have to look at, again, in a way, what are you really hoping for? And look carefully at the hopes. And realize that, in a way, the very nature of our lives often is going to actually inevitably lead to that very dark place. Because in the end, it's not answering a much deeper need that we have. And, you know, and that there is, in a way, we all have an intuition that there's a deeper meaning and a deeper purpose. And actually, when we actually don't give to it, in a way, the consequences is despair, because in a way, what we have to face at points is that the meaning will vanish, while there's a deep spiritual meaning that actually gives meaning to everything that you do, and even gives meaning to all the things going wrong in your life. Because they all have deep meaning. It's not like those things are getting in the way, which actually, again, is almost putting your hopes in the wrong direction, which is the more normal way to approach it, where you're just hoping, basically, to kind of squeeze through life as without too much hassle. And if you look at it, isn't that what most of us, aren't we usually trying to do that? Just kind of, let me kind of get through this without it kind of getting too much in the way. You know, all these things that can go wrong, maybe I can angle around them. And maybe I'll kind of just, and it doesn't actually work. You know, and actually there's great, you know, the truth of the matter is it's actually good that it doesn't work too well, or else we will never learn. And the despair will still be there. Just like I've been around people dying, and they actually keep asking themselves often, is like, really, what was my life? What was its purpose? What did I really do with it? And that actually is one of the reasons we have despair now, is when you look at it deeply, what am I really doing with it? Just like I've met parents whose child dies, and it's almost like, well, what's the point of it all? You know, I mean, there we is. You know, we put all this time, energy, love, and it's gone. And although it's human to have that feeling come up, and it's inevitable for it to come up on some level, you know, and it actually wouldn't be possible in a way as a parent not to have it come up a bit, still, when you look at it from a Buddhist point of view, you know, what we are, in a way, our whole life is an offering. Despair is actually a way of looking at life from the self-centered view of thinking of it, what can I get? You know, what can I get into my life? And almost the alternative to and the solution to despair is actually a giving without asking for something in return, which is a giving in faith that, you know, which is kind of like despair is almost saying, please, just make me happy. Make it quick. You know, kind of solve my problems. You know, while training isn't, when the obstacles come up, even despair comes up, training is kind of giving the patience and acceptance when we have that restless, agitated feeling. It's kind of saying, okay, I feel hopeless, and you just take refuge in the Dharma that says, you know, I am the same as Buddha. There's no problem here. And if I sit still, this feeling doesn't have to impact me. It's just kind of moving through me. And it's just the karmic consequences of actually me placing my heart in the wrong places in the past. And as long as I do that, I'm going to get that feeling of despair come up when my hopes aren't met. And sometimes we don't even know what we're hoping for. You know, it's suddenly we wake up and we realize this despair's there because we actually then realize how we've been, without even realizing it, hoping for something that actually, you know, isn't going to really help in the deepest sense. Anyway, if that helped or not, but as I, you know, just like, you know, the, because despair, the feeling comes through us, but despair is kind of helped generate it in us by kind of that reflective mind that's judging what's happening as lacking, as wrong, that there's something amiss. Just like when I talk to people about their practice, it's very common that people are looking, you know, and just saying, well, this is wrong with me. That is wrong with me. That is wrong with me. And in the end, you know, there's nothing wrong. That's just what they need to deal with. And naturally, if they never accept that they need to deal with it, you know, it's going to take them a while. But if they're just willing to accept it, there's no problem there. And often people doing well have the same problems as people doing poorly on one level. You know, if they describe their list of problems, sometimes they have very similar problems. It's just on one case they're saying, okay, this is what I deal with. The other case they're saying, oh God, this is hopeless. And turning away. And it's actually the exact same problem. You know, the exact same difficulty.
Is there any difference between despair and depression?
Yeah, there is a difference between despair and depression. Despair kind of, you can be depressed without, despair is more when you give meaning to the depression. In the sense, you're depressed. You know, just like depression can even be a clinical, you know, has a clinical aspect of it, of even just feeling utterly, that very word, depressed, crummy, oppressed. And it's a feeling. And it's really what you do. You can turn the depression into despair, or you could just turn normal crumminess. I mean, I have felt lots of despair, and I've never had clinical depression. I'll just do something dumb and feel despair, or kind of be lazy and then feel despair, and make wrong choices and then just feel despair. And naturally, it's harder. I mean, depression is a rough problem because, you know, it's depressing to be depressed. I mean, the very word is that it's hard to feel bright and positive when you're feeling dark and dismal. But that's actually, but also that's the solution. It's like the solution to despair and depression is to give. You know, that is the only solution. Just like when somebody's depressed, do something positive. You know, get, you know, because it's even the syndrome of everyone I've talked to who has depression is that of not moving, of being frozen. And it's actually what despair does in our spiritual life. It freezes us. We don't want to give because there's no point, just like you have in depression. There's no point in cleaning my room, no point in getting out of bed, no point in doing this. Yet, training is treating your life and the world as Buddha. Not that it can be Buddha, not that, you know, trying to accept and treat it like this is the life of Buddha. You know, my life and Shakyamuni Buddha's life are not different. They're different if I, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. If I treat my life as being defiled, messed up, and woe is me. But I can also treat my life, you know, and just say, right now, I am going to do what the Buddha would do. I'm going to try to be still as best as I can. I may not be able to be as still as the Buddha, be as patient as the Buddha, but I know that's what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm trying to be compassionate. And in a way, you know, that, and that allows you to reflect a fuller meaning back. Because we want a life to reflect back to us that has deep meaning and significance. Well, actually, the only way that happens is when we bring that meaning and significance into our lives by trying to act in faith that it's there. And then our life reflects it back. Meaning, you know, you have to be, you know, just like to be grateful, even though you don't feel grateful at the moment. You know, you just try to be grateful. Because you know, just like that cookie we just ate, you know, that's something to be grateful for. You got show. You sit still, even though you feel like, God, there's no point to it. And you just tell yourself there is a point to it. And you do it. You know, because the whole point in Buddhism is that the wholeness and fulfillment we're always looking for are already there in our hearts. All we have to do is stop feeding the other things. And the despair really comes out of thinking that our happiness is out there. And that's a really compulsive pattern. I mean, the world's full of people hell-bent or heaven-bent on pursuing it, you know, thinking that if they can just get this, they'll be happy. And, you know, I was reading one monk saying that people kind of, he was describing his life as a monk. And somebody was actually saying, well, Judy, you were saying something about the Dalai, you saw the Dalai Lama yesterday. And they asked, what did he say about enjoying himself?
And the question and answer said, what do you do for fun? And he looked up and he said, I sleep. For 7 hours. Free time, yeah.
Well, that's what I'll do this afternoon. Because I'm tired right now. But on the other hand, that used to be I was trying to have fun. You know, when I was a layperson, I put a lot of energy into trying to enjoy myself. And actually, I didn't usually, it wasn't that much fun. Sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. I've become a monk where I don't very often have these things where, wow, this is going to be a lot of fun. Let me bungee jump. No, I'm kidding. But let me, you know, let me go to the Bahamas. Let me, you know, let me have fun. Let me eat in the best restaurants. Let me do this. And, you know, and actually there, that isn't, you know, the real happiness is really just being where you are. You know, and then there's a light everywhere. You know, in all the little things in life, you know, where, you know, it's kind of absurd to me really to think of doing something dramatic to have a good time. You know, it's kind of, it feels dumb for me to find, you know, kind of do a big thing to enjoy myself. Because in a way, you know, the little things in life are actually fine and there's something actually wrong with me if somehow I need, it's almost like I need great beauty to enjoy myself rather than just looking at, you know, nice flowers. You know, I need, you know, something really thrilling or entrancing, you know, just because in a way what most people are doing is seeking happiness by being distracted from their lives. The beauty's out there. You know, everything is out there that they're, in a way, like a hungry ghost trying to suck in. Art, food, music, travel, sex, socializing, all these things are in ways, if you look at it carefully, although none of them are wrong to do, and it's part of life to do it to some extent, I do all of those things to some extent, at least most of them. As I look at my list, not all of them. But on the other hand, it's that compulsive way of seeking fulfillment from them that actually will cause you to have despair, because in the end, you know, I can remember just going to museum after museum until, wow, another Titian, another, you know, I remember like being in Italy, you know, art overload. You know, how many galleries in Florence do I want to see? You know, kind of another grandmaster. And of course, you know, another great painting. Well, that's kind of nice. And of course, you do what everybody does, is you're just jaded. You know, you can only really do that for a few hours. You know, honestly, I think for most of us, you know, you can't spend. In fact, Reverend Alden very nicely said, he goes to a museum and he tries to only look at a few pictures. He says, because otherwise, it's all like, you know, what are you doing? You kind of, okay, that's nice. Boom, that's nice. Boom, that's nice. And he says, just look at it and appreciate a few things and then go, which is actually kind of seeing it from that meditation point of view where in the end, you know, it's just kind of like you can't keep eating the good food. In fact, if you ever want to have food taste really good, don't go to a very good restaurant. Be hungry. It'll actually taste better than probably at the best restaurant. I mean, the most tasty food I've had in my life was when I was really hungry. You know, in fact, you know, it's like we've all a lot of you, I'm sure, have gone camping. And doesn't it often seem like that dreadful food? You know, I mean, it's not good food. It always tastes good. I can remember doing backpacking trips with kids. And the kids said, kind of came back and told everybody, that's the best food we've had in our whole life. And I thought, it's amazing what you can do when you have kids carry a pack and hike for 15 miles. Macaroni and cheese is the best food I've ever had. And in a way, that's real happiness because, you know, it's grounded in just something real, rather than that high we're trying to get of having that exquisite meal. And then often being disappointed, I remember doing that, and I'm disappointed when it's only okay. Do you know what I mean? It's like you go to a restaurant, you get a dish, and you think it's going to be really good, and it's okay, you know, nothing special. You know, perfectly reasonable food, and actually you don't even enjoy it because it's only perfectly reasonable food. And you think, I could have made this. What? Yeah. And really, the gift Buddhist practice can give us is freedom from despair. Because by not looking in the wrong places for happiness, then we can find what's real, and it can't be taken with us. Can't be taken with us. Can't be taken from us. You know, and just like there was a nice book I was reading at the Abbey, and actually I took some notes on for a class on, where it's going transforming problems into happiness. You know, is the title of the book, of that's Buddhist practice, using our very lives as the grounds of being happy, and they all point us to something deeper. You know, even those, the very things that we feel limited by, our inadequacy, failures, pain, distress, if we use them and sit still with them, they actually help fuel something very deep in us, because in a way, you know, in a way they force us to turn deeper towards what's real. And that's actually a great gift, you know, not a problem. That's what we really want, is to be forced to to turn real, to turn towards something real. You know, the real problem in life is that we're allowing, is that actually we are bound in our lives. You know, we feel bound. And it's actually because in a way we're looking in the wrong direction. And despair is just that doubt that makes that feeling and obstacle seem fixed. And it's a very question people often have is that, you know, I have this problem, that's who I am, it's hopeless. And we've all had that at times of kind of fixing our karma. You know, this is who we are. And then it's who we are until we're willing to kind of... The Dharma is medicine to everything. No matter what problem people bring me, the Dharma will cure it. Period. No qualification. If you apply the Dharma, all problems will dissolve. Everything hurt will be cured. It just won't be done on your terms. You know, it comes by accepting it and being willing to allow the pain and suffering to move through you and not compounding it, for instance, by doing what we do with despair, which is turn our lives in the wrong direction then, because it's hopeless. So why should I make the effort? And then, of course, it's cycle. You know, you start spiraling downward. Well, where do I find meaning in my life? And you kind of like, it's almost like you're falling and you're trying to grasp things as you're going, if you're not careful. And, you know, because in a way it's like the Four Noble Truths. Despair is really that underlies that first noble truth, that life is unsatisfactory, that there's something fundamentally wrong with what we're doing. And, because then that's really the second noble truth. You know, the first noble truth is that that suffering exists, and despair is usually the response to when we, to the attachments, the things that we are grasping. We grasp and then we feel despair because we can't hold on. We can't keep this happiness. We can't keep our lives under our control. We can't control what we all want to do, which is, I want to control what's going to happen to me. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to fail, so I better find a way, kind of a safe place to be in, and protect myself from all of this. And it doesn't work. And the third noble truth, nirvana exists, is the answer to despair. Everything we want, we already have, and we don't have to keep looking outside ourselves. In the stillness of our hearts, the love and the peace and the freedom we want is there. And the fourth noble truth is just the mind of Buddhist training. If you do this, you know, the peace will come. Because all despair really means is that you want things to be different than they are. And all Buddhist training is based on that there's no problem with reality. The problem's in our hearts. You know, the way the karma is going isn't the problem. The problem is our hearts, and actually that's the problem in the world. All those problems aren't that they're suffering there. It's what people are doing with the suffering. And often we just want to repress the feelings or cover them up. But then we have despair tinging our lives. We can kind of get caught up in things, but the despair's still there. You know, what am I going to be like when I stop being so caught up in all this stuff that is so filling my life? My job, my house, my family. You know, just like a few people I've talked to in recent years where their marriages fell apart when their kids grew up. It's like, what do we do now? You know, what's the point? And both of them had the question almost like they were good parents, but what was the point? That somebody was telling me one of these stories that is so sad that it's funny, that this fellow who was like 100 divorced his wife of 90-something. And they go, why did you divorce? Well, our son died. And it's not really as real. And they were staying together for the children. You know, it's, I said, that's so bad. What? You know, when we can let kind of our obsessive thoughts be the real thing, you know, these opinions of ourselves, the world, and of everything, and then they're the real thing. But meditation, the whole point of the practice is to let go of, to see how our patterns of thoughts and feelings are, how the judgments are, how the opinions are that underlie the despair, so we can see what we're doing, let go of it. And then in the stillness of our heart, all these entanglements will go, because they're not fundamental. It's almost a false picture of reality, just like our pictures of ourselves as being this, you know, sometimes, you know, somewhat sad, you know, being, going through time, you know, going to just die, and what's the point, and, you know, I'm nobody special, and all the rest, you know, isn't really a picture of reality. In fact, one of the points of giving and training is that in the end, we're liberated actually by realizing that we're not very important. Most despair has us being very important. You know, we're important. These problems are big deals. What I'm doing is this big, you know, in fact, you know, this is important stuff. I know nobody else wants to listen to me about it, but it's still important stuff. And then you just realize it's, you know, you can just let go of it and just be still. And the real life of Buddha is there. And who we are, our successes and failures, aren't the important thing, which actually allows us to let go. You know, when we're, it's like the line I always like of Dogen, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by everything. To study Buddhism is to study the self. First, you have to be still enough to see what you're doing, to be aware, what is it that's going on? Then you can stop being so caught up in it and actually see what's, you know, see life, see others, see what's going on in your life, and stop being so trapped in this box that we've placed ourselves in, and in which we're not that important. You know, even what we're doing isn't that important. You know, it's kind of, you know, just think of, you know, of how bad you think your failures are and how proud you are of your successes. And think of the real fact that neither of them really matter that much. Neither of them are even that big a deal usually. When I think of what I do well, you know, it's pretty insignificant. And I think of what I do poorly, to most people, none of it really matters. You know, when you look at it from the outside perspective, it's not like it's this big deal. But from us, you know, these secret failures, just like I remember somebody telling me as a monk, because I was getting so down at myself, and he would kind of say to me, you know, kind of, how can you be so upset about all these little things? I'm making these big mistakes. And he ended up leaving. Because in the end, he was making big mistakes. But we were both, you know, and he should have been binding himself a little more by seeing what he was doing. But on the other hand, you know, looking at it, I can see how I had to just let go and just be willing and just trust that it's enough to be who I am, where I am. You know, a basic line to remind yourself, no matter what situation you're in, it's no problem. The problem's in our heart. And that solved by just sitting still and accepting and dealing with it. you know, on the positive side. You know, like if I'm making a mistake, I do try to just see how I can do it better. And if I make the mistake again, try to learn from it and do better and have patience. And know that sooner or later I'll stop making that mistake. There's nothing fixed in me that's going to keep making that mistake, or fixed in you, because it's, you know, it doesn't quite make sense to keep doing it. And you have to have faith in that. You know, that there's nothing in you that doesn't want to wholeheartedly offer yourself, and nothing in you that doesn't wholeheartedly want to open your heart and receive. Everything else is a delusion, and the rest of this stuff will burn off if you don't hold on to it. Just like despair has no reality if we don't hold on to it. You know, it's just a feeling. You know, but then we kind of grasp it, and it becomes our reality. You know, and I always like thinking kind of sort of what despair is. It's kind of like being Woody in a Woody Allen movie where there's no hope. You know, which he eloquently expresses in many ways in his jokes, this feeling of deep despair. And a lot of people, you know, it's a strong part of the culture. Anyway, did I get everyone really depressed? Well, I was making lesser mistakes than he was, and he was just amazed how I could be so depressed and despairing about little mistakes when he was making big mistakes. Okay, do you follow that?
That much, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, he was making big mistakes.
Well, there is a problem with making big mistakes and that, and not actually. Although, in a way, when you're making big mistakes, you know, there is a problem in making big mistakes in the sense that you have to really work at not making the big mistakes, or eventually you'll make enough of a big mistake that you'll end up just being in utter despair yourself, because you're kind of ignoring karma if you keep choosing to make big mistakes. You know, if you keep choosing to break the precepts, you're not going to keep training. Why? Because you're going to feel despair, because you're going to judge yourself when you make a mess of it, and you actually, by always making the wrong choices volitionally, you're going to lose faith in yourself. It's a natural consequence. You know, the real problem with making big mistakes is if you're not careful, you're going to lose faith in yourself. You know, you're going to think that this is who you are, and that's a problem. The solution for it is what I'm saying, but again, if you keep choosing not to follow the teaching, eventually you're going to completely stop following the teaching. You know, it's kind of hard to kind of be on two paths of saying, well, I'm really, for instance, in this case, I'm a monk, I'm doing this, and then still choose to do really things that are clear, big mistakes. Now, for a while, he was pulling that off because he was in enough of a fog that he couldn't kind of realize what he was doing. But eventually, the consequences caught up to him, in the sense that you make a big enough mess, you're going to want to get, you know, you're just not going to want to face the consequences of it. And if you're in a real, and if you're not training, you know, and that is the problem of not taking the precepts to heart. When we don't take the Buddhist precepts to heart, what we're actually doing is saying it's okay for me to choose to do wrong and turn away from the Buddha. And if we keep choosing to turn away from the Buddha, we can't be surprised that at some point we will completely turn away from the Buddha. So each time you make a mistake, it's important to try to do Sangye, which is just the acceptance of responsibility, and try to say, I'm going to try not to make this mistake again. And each time you do it, if you don't try to make a correction, it's going to be hard for you not to despair. Not basically because you yourself are choosing to turn away. And in the end, you're going to judge yourself. you know, and it's inevitable. There's no way around it. You know, there's no easy solution to that. You can't kind of say, I keep choosing not to train, and then I should feel good about myself. The only way you can do that is to let go of all that in the moment and wholeheartedly try to train now and not to repeat that mistake. And if you keep choosing to repeat the mistake, despair comes in, and there's really no way around it. You know, it's kind of like saying, I want to have a good relationship with somebody, but I'm going to abuse them. You know, it won't work. You know, I want to be a success at work, but I don't want to show up. You know, I don't want to really work. Eventually, you have to choose one or the other. So, because actually the other choice actually is despair. You know, is an actualization of despair. You know, though we have to have patience with our breaking of the precepts, we still have to try not to break them. The fact that we break them isn't the problem, but we still have to try not to. You know, meaning the only way this works is to have a commitment to do it. You know, and that is actually what frees us, because if we only do it when we feel like doing it, it won't work. And then despair comes in. The commitment allows you to do it no matter how you feel. And then you're free, because you actually can relax and know. It's kind of like when I used to go on a long hike. Often I knew I was going to do the whole hike no matter how I felt. You know, and then it didn't matter how I felt. I was going to just take one step after the other and finish the hike. And I could just relax and hike. When I did it, when I didn't know if I felt like doing it. I remember hiking up Mount Shasta with somebody years ago, and he just didn't know if he wanted to do it. And so he just stopped at one point, thought, okay, that's enough. You know, I kind of knew, oh, if I'm doing this, I'm going to do it. No point in getting halfway up the mountain. Not that that's an important thing to get up, but still, it allowed it to be very easy for me mentally, because I just knew no matter how I felt, I was going to keep going. You know, and that's the only way you can have a meditation practice and a spiritual practice, is to commit yourself so you're going to do it no matter what happens. And then you can relax and just say, okay, I know I'm going to keep doing this. Even if I make a mess of it, I know I'm going to keep doing this. I know I'm going to even have to kind of clean up this mess no matter what I do. Which actually has a tendency after a while to make you think, do I even want to make the mess so I have to clean it up? You know, it's kind of like thinking before I yell at somebody, do I really want to be mentally aware, if I say this, all I'm going to have to do is apologize? You know, it seems a lot less painful to skip the step and just go out and yell at the bush or something. Yeah?
Just a question that's off the subject, but should you meditate when you're sick?
Yes, if you can. It matters what sickness you have. If you feel your head so, you know, if you can mentally meditate, you know, even sometimes it's good to meditate a few minutes in bed. You know, they have, you know, just lying flat on your back is a classic way to meditate. And it's good to be still for a few minutes. You have to do what won't be compassionate to your body, which at times is not compassionate to do. You know, there's lots of illnesses where the last thing you want to be doing is saying, okay, I'm going to do a half hour period right now. But often you can do a few minutes even feeling lousy. Or often you can do it in bed. So it really varies on what the illness is like. Do you want to be more specific then?
Back in the fall, I had the flu. I was feeling miserable. And then last week, I caught a head cold from a patient and feeling absolutely miserable again. And it just occurred to me that it's, you know, the normal ebb and flow of life. You know, I can get myself to go sit down sometimes when I don't feel like sitting down, but I just began to wonder I what the monks did, and even what Reverend Master did when she was very, very ill.
Reverend Master had it, a lot of it is just trying to be still wherever you are. I mean, Reverend Master would just often be, she would actually be just still and meditating, in some of the mundane activities of life, sometimes even watching TV at times. I could see that she completely stopped paying attention to it, and she was really just meditating for a while, and it was quite noticeable. It's still helpful to make acts of faith, offer incense, recite verses, do the little things, meditate for a minute or two, 5 minutes, find things that are gently training but still giving your body and mind, it's like sometimes your head just isn't capable of doing formal meditation, but just to say the three refuges, just to read something if your mind's, sometimes you can't read. I mean, sometimes I'm, so it's really where your mind is. I've had it, it's like you run a fever, you run a high fever, basically you can't do anything other than just try to accept. Rosaries are good, and
just being still in the midst of that meditation.
Yeah, it is. Just trying not to get caught up and just trying to accept what's going on, trying not to let it bother you, trying to let go of the ball.
It alleviates the suffering, because I can remember several times when I had just a raging flu, and, I was coughing and I couldn't sleep, because if I lay down and all the phlegm was going to my chest, all I could do was to sit up in a recliner and then just sit there still. And then after a while, all the distress that I felt just kind of fell away, even though I still had all the symptoms. And it was actually quite nice.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, if you can just accept where you are, one of the basic things of meditation is you're trying to fully accept yourself facing a wall, whatever feelings and thoughts come, and letting them go. And just trying to do that with illness in its own way, of trying not to be disturbed by it, trying not to letting go of the worry, the fear, the depression, the annoyance, the impatience. Like, when am I going to get better? It's like sometimes, I'll be sick and then I think, okay, I'll be okay tomorrow. I'll be okay. And I get up and, okay, I'm still not, and just let it go. It's okay. And just be trying to be still. And usually it's good just to do little things that remind yourself and ground yourself, so that in a way, being sick is an important part of training.
Part of it was I was trying to meditate, and every 2 seconds I was reaching for the Kleenex because my nose was pouring like a faucet. This is impossible. I sit still.
But actually, people have sat next to me in the Zendo and.
Yes.
And thought, Reverend Kinley's nose isn't doing well this morning, because every 2 minutes I'm wiping my nose, and it's fine, it doesn't really have to affect the meditation that much. It doesn't really, it's a bit of a distraction, but it actually isn't that big a deal. You just accept, there's nothing wrong with the fact that, your nose is flowing. And in fact, I can still remember, when I was a layperson down in Berkeley, about three of us had all these allergies and chest coughing, and somebody says, I feel like I'm in a hospital ward sitting with you folk. Somebody else had even more than me, and we're all sneezing, coughing, and somebody came through who was came from a different tradition and was sitting with us, and she's just saying, in Rinzai, you don't wipe your nose. And I go, what? And I just go, they just don't let you do this. And I go, I'm sorry, I just can't imagine what I would be doing if, I let all this, what do you do, wear a lobster bib, I kind of go, how do you do that if, I guess they don't sit in the hall then if they're doing that. And just like it doesn't have to bother you, that fact that you have somebody doing that next to you, or, coughing and other things, and it's not that big a deal, it isn't. A lot of it is just acceptance. Just like when we have despair, it's okay. This is our friend despair. We've we've been kind of meeting each other for a long time now. It's okay. Bow to the despair. You know, something in me is looking for something. You know, there's nothing wrong here. Yeah?
I've noticed the awareness that it's there has been really helpful, because what used to happen is I would have a bad feeling that I didn't like. And now I say hello to it.